From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After 30 years of life together, bonded by that thing called marriage, poet Sharon Olds' life was split in two. Her husband left her for someone else, for a new life, and she was left to pick herself up. The story's not new, but the words, the ink, the flashes of heat and emotion and passion and poetry that flowed from her pen in the wake of that silence gave her a new life. It's been 16 years since, and those words have just won her a Pulitzer Prize. This hour On Point, poet Sharon Olds on poetry, divorce, and love. You can join us, listeners. Do you know Sharon Olds' work? Are you a fan? What draws you in? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Concord, New Hampshire is Sharon Olds, 2013 Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, professor of English, and former director of the Creative Writing Program at New York University. Her collections, One Secret Thing, The Father, and Satan Says, have garnered a number of awards and critical acclaim. Her most recent collection, Stag's Leap, received the T.S. Eliot Prize and just won the Pulitzer. Sharon Olds, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Jean. I'm happy to be here.
Must sound wonderful to you. Pulitzer Prize. I just won the Pulitzer Prize. What was that like to get a call with the news that you won Pulitzer Prize?
I think I went into shock, and I think I'm not out of it yet. It's a wonderful thing, but it's just a little too much. It's a lot to take in, something that you don't ever expect to land in your backyard.
I want to read as many poems from this collection as we can this hour, but start us off. Tell us a little bit about this collection. The poetry is beautiful and so moving. I actually read the book in one sitting. It was quite remarkable. I mean, it came from a difficult period in your life 16 years ago, right? Tell us how and when you started to sit down and write.
Well, the poems in this book, like the poems in all my other books, just come as if on their own out of whatever is going on in my life, or in the case of the childhood poems, memories that come up or images that come up. And these poems were, I think, no different from any of the others in that some notion or image or musical phrase or something would start forming within the back of my mind, and the front of my mind would notice it and think, this might be a poem. And then I would sit down and see what happened next.
But these formed mostly because of a very painful event in your life, and that was your marriage of more than 30 years, which ended.
Oh, yes. This is definitely an end-of-long marriage book, a book about shock, loss, mourning, and healing.
For many people, I would think revisiting a fresh wound as this one by pondering it so deeply and so movingly might actually cause more pain. Was writing your therapy? Was it your way out? I mean, how did you think of it at the time and now?
I can see how you would think of that. To me, it's more like, if you love to dance rock and roll and a great song, Aretha Franklin, Respect, say, comes on, you want to move. And it's a pleasure to move. So for me, whatever it is that comes up, I'm so glad that a poem has come to me to be written that hour, that I'm not aware of revisiting. I'm so engaged in letting the poem move sort of from my unconscious out the end of my pen, with then later some revisions on my part, that it doesn't feel anything like a task. It feels like being really alive.
Let's start. Let's start in on some of your beautiful work. Let's start with the first one here, entitled Telling My Mother. I think so often for those who do go through a painful separation from a husband, a wife, or a loved one, many of the hardest parts, one of the hardest parts is actually telling others, telling those around you, and you do this in that poem. Would you read it for us?
Absolutely. Thank you. Telling my mother, outside her window, a cypress, under the weight of the Pacific wind, was bending luxuriously. To tell my mother that my husband is leaving me. I took her on a walk, taking her fleshless hand like a passerine's claw. I bought her a donut and a hairnet. I fed her. On the gnarled magnolia in the fog, the blossoms and buds were like all the moons in one night, full gibbous crescent. I'd practiced the speech, bringing her up toward the truth slowly, preparing her. And the moment I told her, she looked at me in shock and dismay. "But when will I ever see him again?" she cried out. I held hands with her and steadied us, joking. Above her spruce, through the coastal mist, for a moment, a small, dry, sandy, glistering star. Then I felt in my whole body for a second that I have not loved enough. I could almost see my husband's long shape wraithing up. I did not know him. I did not work not to lose him, and I lost him, and I've told my mother. And it's clear from her harrowed, sorrowing cheeks and childhood mountain lake eyes that she loves me. So the men are gone, and I'm back with Mom. I always feared this would happen. I thought it would be a pure horror, but it's just home, Mom's house and garden, earth, olive, and willow, beech, orchid, and the paperweight dusted with opal, inside it the arms of a nebula raking its heavens with a soft screaming.
Those lines, "I always feared this would happen." Did you really always fear this moment, telling your mother you felt that
no.
might come?
No. No. But I think perhaps, especially for children who have dysfunctional attachments to a parent, the fear of never getting out of that dysfunctional dyad and out into, you know, a healthy grown-up love would be maybe an underlying unconscious fear. It's also sort of like a joke.
Your divorce came after more than 30 years of marriage, as I said, and I'm curious because so many of us wondered what was that moment like, being told that it was over.
Well, Jane, if you like, I could read you the first poem in the book, which is completely about that,
yes.
Or I could try to answer it in talk.
Let's read.
Oh, good. Thank you. While he told me, I looked from small thing to small thing in our room, the face of the bedside clock, the sepia postcard of a woman bending down to a lily. Later, when we took off our clothes, I saw his deep navel and the cindery lichen skin between the male breasts. And from outside the shower curtain's terrible membrane, I called out something like flirting to him, and he smiled. Before I turned out the light, he touched my face, then turned away, then the dark. Then every scene I thought of, I visited accompanied by a death spirit. Everything was chilled with it. Each time I woke, I lay in dreading bliss to feel and hear him sigh, and snore. Near sunrise, behind overcast, he got up to go in and read on the couch, as he often did, and in a while I followed him, as I often had, and snoozed on him while he read, and he laid an arm across my back. When I opened my eyes, I saw two tulips stretched away from each other extreme in the old vase with the grotto carved out of a hill, and a person in it, underground, praying, my imagined shepherd in make-believe paradise.
Why so long to get these poems to print, Sharon Olds?
Yes, well, as soon as they were written And I wrote hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of poems. And the about 50 in this book are just the ones that I thought worked the best. And as soon as I had written one that I liked, as always with my work, the next time I gave a reading of my poems, I would include the new poem and see how it felt and how it sounded and whatever psychic or projected, imagined response from an audience I would get. And so over time, I knew the ones that I felt were working. And then if I had given a reading, the next thing I would do would be submit a poem to a magazine. And so many of these poems came out in magazines over the last 15 years. I waited to put the book together. I actually, unprompted, had just came into my mind to say to my grown children that I won't be making a book out of this for 10 years. Just so they could have their own adjustment time without having, you know, having a poet, a family poet in the family is not something that many people would ask for. And I think it's enough to have the poems come out in magazines without there being a book until some time had passed.
Well, they might not ask for a poet in the family unless that poet was you. We're talking love and divorce with Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Sharon Olds. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point. We're talking about the poetry of love and divorce, the poetry of pain and healing. We're speaking today with poet Sharon Olds, author of the collections The Father and Satan Says. She just won a Pulitzer for her latest collection, Stag's Leap, which she wrote following her divorce after more than 30 years of marriage. Sharon Olds, there's a lot of metaphor and simile in this collection. Has it always been that way with your work?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Yes, and it's the part that I like best about my work, and it's the part over which I have no control. I can't make up a simile. It feels as if they're coming through the pen, kind of, while I'm concentrating and writing. I think that my brain is just a brain that notices things that are like other things. And I've thought a lot over the years about what that means, if I like making those connections so that what's actually happening in the present is connected to things in the past or somewhere far away, if simile isn't about connection.
Well, there's metaphor in the signature poem of this collection. It's called Stag's Leap. Describe it for us, and then would you read it?
Yes. Let's see. This is a poem which... maybe I better read it, and maybe I can describe it after I read it.
Of course.
Stag's Leap. Then the drawing on the label of our favorite red wine looks like my husband casting himself off a cliff in his fervor to get free of me. His fur is rough and cozy, his face placid, tranced, ruminant. The bow of each furculum reaches back to his haunches. Each tine of it grows straight up and branches like a model of the brain, archaic, unwieldy. He bears its bony tray level as he soars from the precipice edge, dreamy. When anyone escapes, my heart leaps up. Even when it's I who am escaped from, I am half on the side of the lever. It's so quiet and empty when he's left. I feel like a landscape, a ground without a figure. Sauve qui peut. Let those who can save themselves save themselves. Once I saw a dry point of someone tiny being crucified on a fallow deer's antlers. I feel like his victim, and he seems my victim. I worry that the outstretched legs on the heart are bent the wrong way as he throws himself off. Oh, my mate, I was vain of his faithfulness, as if it was a compliment rather than a state of partial sleep. And when I wrote about him, did he feel he had to walk around carrying my books on his head like a stack of posture volumes or the rack of horns hung where a hunter washes the venison down with the Sauvignon? Oh, leap, leap, careful of the rocks. Does the old vow have to wish him happiness in his new life, even sexual joy? I fear so at first, when I still can't tell us apart. Below his shaggy belly in the distance lie the even dots of a vineyard, its vines not blasted, its roots clean, its bottles growing at the ends of their blowpipes as dark green wavering groans.
That line, does the old vow have to wish him happiness in his new life? Did you feel that you had to wish him happiness, your former husband? Did you feel like you had to wish him happiness in his new life?
Well, I think when you've had a good marriage and a long one, that you're in the habit of wishing someone well. And when someone is the other parent of your beloved children, you're in the habit of wishing them all well. So I think that question was a question before much separation of emotion had really happened.
I expected more bitterness in some of this work, but there is an overwhelming amount of love, sometimes even sympathy, I would say, for him. And I'm curious about that. Could you speak to that?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think a marriage is 50-50, a divorce is 50-50. Empathy is a really good habit to have. I see a theme running through the book of some of the poems having in them lines about not having enough anger. And there are people who don't get angry and defend themselves quite up to the normal rate. And this seems to me like a book by that kind of person.
Let's get a call in here. Loretta is on the line from Ponca City, Oklahoma. Did I get that right, Loretta? Welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi,
go ahead.
Loretta. This is so cool that you're in Oklahoma City.
Well, it's so cool that you're writing about something that I have experienced, but from a child's point of view,
right?
Not from the divorcee's point of view.
Right.
And so what do you hear in these poems, Loretta? What do you hear in a Pulitzer Prize winner's work?
Oh, my gosh. The fact that I heard my mother's voice talking about what she had experienced. And I've just gone through losing both my mother and my father. And my mother's so close, and to hear her say, you know, talking to her mother, and I mean, I just couldn't get past the first one that she read.
Loretta, thank you very much.
Loretta, that's so cool for me to hear. That's the kind of connection that every writer just dreams of. So thank you.
Here's another listener, Sharon Olds from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Marcy Marr is on the line. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I would like to know, I've experienced a similar thing, only I did the leaving. I left my husband with a wise choice. He was abusive and psychologically and emotionally and verbally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it took me quite a time to leave. I just had a aha moment, as they'd say, and I made the move, and I'm glad I did. I was taking care of my mother at the time, and she has since passed, and we are now legally divorced, and I'm still having post-divorce issues. How do you, and I don't know if you've had this problem, but how do you deal with anxiety? And I've had panic attacks, and I'm trying to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Olds.
I do exercise, and I do read, and try to stay active, but it's always something's popping.
Well, those are great things to do, I think. I do those things, too. Drink enough water. Walk. Dance. Stretch. And try to be kind to yourself. I talk to myself, trying to talk to myself in a kind way to overbalance those voices that some of us have from early on in our lives that are negative voices about ourselves. So be sweet. Be sweet to yourself. Talk to yourself kindly. That's what I try to do.
Let's get another poem in here, Sharon Olds. I'm going to let you choose one. I have a list here that I want to hear you read. I mean, I'd love to hear the healers or running into you, but whatever you think.
Oh, thank you. Wow. I think Known to Be Left.
Okay.
And then I'll hope to get to those in a bit. Known to Be Left. If I pass a mirror, I turn away. I do not want to look at her, and she does not want to be seen. Sometimes I don't see exactly how to go on doing this. Often, when I feel that way, within a few minutes I am crying, remembering his body or an area of it, his backside often, a part of him just right now to think of, luscious, not too detailed, and his back turned to me. After tears, the chest is less sore, as if some goddess of humanness within us has caressed us with a gush of tenderness. I guess that's how people go on, without knowing how. I am so ashamed before my friends to be known, to be left, by the one who supposedly knew me best. Each hour is a room of shame, and I am swimming, swimming, holding my head up, smiling, joking, ashamed, ashamed. Like being naked with the clothed, or being a child, having to try to behave while hating the terms of your life. In me now, there's a being of sheer hate, like an angel of hate. On the badminton lawn, she got her one shot, pure as an arrow, while through the eyelets of my blouse the no-see-ums bit the flesh no one seems now to care to touch. In the mirror, the torso looks like a pin-up hives martyr, or a cream pitcher speckled with henbit and pussy paws, full of the milk of human kindness and unkindness, and no one is lining up to drink. But look, I am starting to give him up. I believe he is not coming back. Something has died inside me, believing that, like the death of a crone in one twin bed as a child is born in the other. Have faith, old heart. What is living anyway but dying?
Well, what does that describe? What is that about? And when did you write that poem?
Pretty early on, I think probably 1997. It's so hard for me to know what my poems are about. I just sort of follow them. My pen follows them out onto the page when I'm writing them. I don't plan them. I don't know what's coming next. And then when I'm reading them, I'm not looking for meaning. Those last couple of lines, that kind of has meaning. That's almost like an idea. I don't think I ever have ideas in my poems, but that one is a little like an idea. So just all the description, which is like, I don't know, some kind of living in the present moment, does come out to some kind of sad, funny idea at the end of this poem.
I'm speaking with 2013 Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Sharon Olds. Her most recent collection, Stag's Leap, received the Pulitzer. Has also received the T.S. Eliot Prize. Sharon, you speak a lot about being accurate in your work, almost as if you're a journalist. It's not a term you hear often from poets, so I'm curious, what about accuracy? Is it the stories you're talking about, the feelings, who's right, who's wrong? Why is it so important to you, the accuracy piece?
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I wanted to be a journalist. I love those stories, and my poems are certainly kind of narrative. They're kind of telling stories. I think I mean to get the words that seem to me to describe the feeling as exactly as possible. Yeah. So, again, it's just personal. But it seems to me that when the descriptions are are as close as I can get them to actual life, that those lines seem to me to have a kind of a liveliness to them. Maybe they're a little more original also than lines I might write that were more this kind of received notion, like a cliche of what we think we're going to be feeling at a particular time. So that's how accuracy comes to be an important word for me. Not so much in the idea of fairness or truth as just getting the description right.
All right. Let's hear The Healers. Would you read it?
I would, with pleasure. And I have all these pages turned down. I just have to say, as I'm looking for the page, that how thrilling it is for me to be here with you live and getting ready for today. I was thinking about people like in their kitchens and their car, the way I will be listening in my kitchen or my car. And I was very moved by that sense of close connection and how the radio lets us hear each other's thoughts, kind of, in a way. So I wanted to thank you for this pleasure for me. The Healers, when they say, "If there are any doctors aboard, would they make themselves known?" I remember when my then husband would rise, and I would get to be the one he rose from beside. They say now that it does not work unless you are equal. And after those first 30 years, I was not the one he wanted to rise from or return to, not I, but she who would also rise when such were needed. Now I see them lifting side by side on wide medical wading bird wings, like storks with the doctor bags of like loves like dangling from their beaks. Oh well, it was the way it was. He did not feel happy when words were called for and I stood. Now, we can't really say that there's no anger in these poems.
Well, and a lot of pain, might I say, and a little self-loathing. Is that accurate?
Where's the self-loathing? I rewrite these books every time there's a new printing. I change it. So I don't see it in this one. I mean, certainly for all of us writers and most of us humans, self-loathing is a problem. But I don't see it. I feel that the ending of this poem is judgmental, not against the self. And I like that idea. They say it doesn't work unless you are equal. Right. Yeah. I see there are a lot of jokes in this book that I think I'm the only person who's laughing at.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Joining me today is Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Sharon Olds. Her recent collection, Stag's Leap, won the T.S. Eliot Prize and just earned her a Pulitzer Prize. Let's go to the phones and our listeners. Jeff is in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Jeff, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, Jane. I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to make a comment. I've never been a big fan of poetry, but listening to the stories from Miss Olds there and then hearing her read the poems and how they personally relate to her, I just wanted to let her know that it's some of the most moving stuff I've ever heard. I'm personally fortunate enough to be happily married, so I think that pulls on my heartstrings a little bit more because I could only imagine the kind of pain that would be associated with that. So I just wanted to thank her for coming on. I imagine that's going to be extremely hard to do, so I wanted to just say thanks and that I really enjoy the poetry she's reading today.
Jeff, thank you.
Thank you so much. And I should say maybe a little word about it being hard. It's really fun to write, and when it's going well, It feels wonderful. I write with a ballpoint pen in a grocery store lined notebook. Just the physical feeling of the ink making the letters on the page is a pleasure to me.
Perhaps one of the hardest poems in your work is called To Our Miscarried One, age 30 now. It hardly needs setting up with such a title as that, but I wish you to read that one, would you?
Absolutely. Thank you. To Our Miscarried One, age 30 now. Though I never saw you, only your clouds, I was afraid of you, of how you differed from what we had wanted you to be. And it's as if you waited then, where such waiting is done, for when I would look beside me, and here you are, in the world of forms, where my wifehood is now, and every action with him, as if 1,000 years from now, you and I are in some antechamber, where the difference between us is of little matter, you with perhaps not much of a head yet, dear garden one, you among the shovels and spades and wafts of beekeeper's shroud and sky blue kidskin gloves. That he left me is not much compared to your leaving the earth, your shifting places on it and shifting shapes. You threw off your working clothes of arms and legs and moved house from uterus to toilet bowl and jointed stem and sewer out to float the rivers and bays in painless pieces, and yet the idea of you has come back to where I could see you today as a small, impromptu god of the partial. When I leave for good, would you hold me in your blue mitt for the departure hence? I never thought to see you again. I never thought to seek you.
Hmm. Do you still think about this, Sharon?
No, but I'm happy that I wrote this one, addressing this sort of semi-creature. And I was trying this time when I was reading to have the lines be audible. I think sometimes when I'm reading, it just sounds like a big mush. And so I was pausing a little more after each line, just because I think it's a pleasure when we're hearing poems to hear the music of their lines ending before a new one begins. I don't know if you could hear that, but I'm trying that.
Here's Nashville, Tennessee, Kim on the line. Kim, welcome to On Point with Sharon Olds.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Ms. Olds, I live in Nashville. I'm a lawyer who has enjoyed your work more than you know. I'm particularly fond of your collection, The Wellspring, and I've probably given a dozen copies of it away.
Thank you, sir.
I greatly admire your work, and there are three poems in there, True Love, Socks, and Visiting My Mother's College, that just knocked me over, and it's very, I've never heard your actual voice, only your inner voice, and it's very interesting to me to hear you speak, and I want to thank you for your work. It's beautiful, and I've read your new collection, and it measures up to everything you've done.
Mm. Kim, what is it about her words, her work? How would you describe it as you read it? As it hits you, it moves you?
She has a unique ability to take ordinary experiences like the poems I've adduced and punch you in the stomach with them, the things you wouldn't otherwise see is so profound, and like visiting your mom's college. And she's able to describe the cascade of emotions and the whole thing of parents and college and all of those complicated things in a very accessible way that I really admire.
Kim, thank you again. I really appreciate your call. Let's get another poem in here, if we could, Sharon. How about
sure.
running into you?
Yes, yes. Running into you. Running into you. seeing you again after so long, seeing you with her, and actually almost not wanting you back, doesn't seem to make me feel separate from you. But you seemed covered with her, like a child working with glue, who's young to be working with glue, or am I the child working with glue? If I could choose a place to die, it would never have been in your arms, old darling. We figured I'd see you out in mine. It was never in doubt that you had suffered more than I when young. That moved me so much about you. The way you were a dumbstruck one, and yet you seemed to know everything I did not know, which was everything, except the gift of gab, and, oh well, dirty dancing and how to apologize. When I went up to you two at the art opening, I felt I had nothing to apologize for. I felt like a somewhat buoyant creature with feet of I don't know what, recovered from sorrow, which held me nicely to the gallery floor as to the surface of a planet, some lunar orb once part of the earth. Have you heard that the moon was created when a giant meteor hit the earth, and then the moon got broken off us and started spinning around us? So that's what that's where I got that image.
Beautiful. Another call from Sandy in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Sandy. You're on the air with Pulitzer Prize winner Sharon Olds.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
First, I'd like to say that I'm very sad that I was not aware of Ms. Olds, and after listening to her and her poetry, I just can't wait to go out and purchase and read her work. I also wanted to say that her verbiage and descriptions are just beyond any other adjective someone could express. I feel that she's also not just addressing divorce. I've been widowed, and I'm planning a divorce, and I think that she hits so many parts of the heart, and that, to me, is where her poetry goes, is rather than the gut or the stomach, is right into the heart. It is amazing how she just can get to a person.
Sandy, thank you very much for your call. Sharon?
Oh, yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Do you have do you have a favorite poem, Sharon?
Not by myself. I don't really.
No. Like each children, right? You can't choose.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Let's get another call in here. Lorraine is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Lorraine. Welcome to On Point.
Hi there.
Hi.
I would like to make a comment. I would like to say that I happened upon this channel quite by accident, and it was a wonderful accident. I'm at work, and I'm actually listening to my iPod while I work. And I want to comment that the poetry is absolutely beautiful, and I am not one who normally reads poetry. I love to read, but I can guarantee you I will have this book, and I will enjoy every bit of it. And I'd just like to thank you for having her on the show today to open up her poetry to so many of us who probably don't know about it.
Well, Lorraine, I'm glad you found us, and thank you very much. Thank you for your call. Sharon, let's read some more.
Okay.
How about Years Later?
Yes. Years Later. Oh, and I'm going to try to do that thing more on this time of letting where the line ends be a little more audible.
Okay.
We'll see how that works.
Okay.
Years later, at first glance, there on the bench where he'd agreed to meet, it didn't seem to be him, but then the face of grim friendliness was my former husband's, like the face of a creature looking out from inside its knocks. No fault, no knock. Clever nut of the hearing aid, hidden in the ear, I do not feel I love anymore. Small bandage on the cheek, peopled with tiny lichen from a land I don't know. We walk, I had not remembered how deep he held himself inside himself, my fun for 32 years, to lure him out. I still kind of want to, as if I see him as a being with a baby paw caught. His voice is the same, low, still pushed around the level bubble in his throat. We talk of the kids, and it's as if that will never be taken from us. But it feels as if he's not here. Though he's here, it feels as if, for me, there's no one there. As when he was with me, it seemed there was no one there for any other woman for the first 30 years. Now I see, I've been hoping each time we meet that he would praise me for how well I took it, but it's not to be. Are you happy as you thought you'd be? I ask. Yes. And his smile is touchingly pleased. I thought you'd look happier, I say. But after all, when I am looking at you, you're with me. We smile. His eyes warm a moment with the accustomed shift, as if he's turning into the species he was for those 30 years, and turning back. I glance toward his torso once, his legs. He's like a stick figure now, the way, when I was with him, other men seemed like Ken dolls, all clothes. Even the gleam of his fresh wedding ring is no blade to my rib. This is married Ken. As I walk him toward his street, I joke, and for an instant, he's alive toward me, a gem of sea of pond in his eye. Then that retreat into himself, which always moved me, as if there were a sideways gravity in him toward some vanishing point. And no, he does not want to meet again in a year. When we part, it is with a dry bow and goodbye. And then there is the spring park, damp as if freshly peeled, sweet greenhouse, green cemetery with no dead in it, except in some shaded woods under some years of leaves and rotted cones, the body of a warbler, like a whole note fallen from the sky, my old love for him, like a songbird's rib cage picked clean.
Before the poem, Sharon, you said you wanted to emphasize more where the lines end and begin. Why is that important?
Well, could you hear it any better than before?
Well, I'm looking at it and I'm reading it, but
oh,
I do hear it
at,
as well,
oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love how poems look on the page, especially like this page, where they are very raggedy looking on the right. And it just looks kind of lively to me. And I write in, without trying to, in pretty much four beat lines, that is four strong accents per line, and then any number of less strong accents. And that's part of my love of poems, probably early on from singing hymns in the church choir. Hmm. Those four beat lines, they mean something to me, even though I tend to ride over the end of the line and just keep the sentence kind of snaking down until it comes to its end. But I would love to be able to read so that people can hear the line and the movement through that pattern as well. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I could talk to you for another hour. I must say, you are delightful. I mean, and just amazing. The last two lines of the last poem in the book are these: I did not leave him, he did not leave me. I freed him, he freed me. I'm just curious because I know many people listening to this interview will wonder, and so I must ask you, has your ex-husband read the collection?
Oh, unfortunately, I've decided not to talk about actual family members when I was out in the world, as I'm so grateful to be today with you, Jane. But I figure it's enough to be written about without also being talked about. Mm. Yeah, so I'm not able to answer that.
What are you writing now?
Well, I've been writing my usual, just whatever comes into my mind or seems to be coming out the end of my pen. Many odes, and as always, just huge numbers of poems about my mother and father, as if they're muses that this muse of the stag in Stag's Leap is joining now.
Well, we'll look forward to your next Pulitzer. Sharon Olds. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much, Jane. It's great talking to you and to the people through you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sharon Olds, her collection Stag's Leap, poems, just won the Pulitzer Prize. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.